Welcome to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast, where top football coaches from around the country share their stories, philosophies, concepts, and strategies to help you get better on and off the field. Now, here's your host, Keith Grabowski.
Welcome to USA Football Coach and Coordinator Podcast, and we continue with our national conference speakers coming up here on January 26th through the 28th in Orlando. And joining me today is the Senior Manager of Education and Training and a tackling expert in his own right, Andy Ryland.
Keith, always good to be on with you. Appreciate you having me on the show.
Andy, it's always great to have you here. Just for our listeners, real quick, give us, I know you've been on before, but give us a little bit of your background in football. You've had some great playing experience. You've also been in rugby at a very elite level too. So talk to us a little bit about what you've done in the past to kind of really get you involved and interested in especially the tackling portion of the game.
Yes, I was a two-sport athlete at Penn State University. I played linebacker on the football team. You know, no superstar fake dreams here. I was a part-time starter, kind of a career backup. Somebody got injured. You know, I started three games. They got healthy. I went back to my special teams role. Somebody else got injured. You know, I started two games, kind of repeated the process. I have eight career starts at linebacker, but earned multiple letters over multiple years playing on special teams and played in every game for 3 years. Just, you know, wasn't a starter. I was an All-American in rugby, slightly better at rugby than I was at football. So having to make the career decision, having seen who got drafted and who didn't, I opted to pursue rugby post-college. I spent 3 years with the U.S. national team. I was lucky enough to be captain both 15s and 7s, which for anyone familiar with soccer, rugby, or any of the other European sports, a cap is when you get an official elite in the game during an international competition. So I was captain both 15s and 7s. After the 2007 World Cup, which I actually did not make, I was in the 50-man training squad but didn't make the final 31. I decided to retire from sports, pursue my education and coaching. Spent some time as an outside linebacker coach at Bucknell University. Then I took an off-field role doing player development at Purdue University before being here at USA Football for the last 5 years, working in the education department. Because of my background as a defensive player, football and with rugby, the common core skill is tackling. So it was always an area that I was drawn to, had multiple influences, multiple styles, multiple coaches, and have been able to hopefully mold those well and work with the experts here at USA Football on our advisory committee to develop some of the tackle programming those in the Heads Up Football program will have been used to seeing.
And I know, you know, for you in 2017, one of the big projects you were involved in was creating and working with the Seattle Seahawks and the AFCA and USA Rugby to create what is now called shoulder tackling. You know, you could call it the hawk tackle, rugby tackle, but ultimately what it comes down to, it is the shoulder tackle, and you're a big part of that. Tell us a little bit about that process.
Yeah, so great question. Obviously, to bring those groups together is a long process. You know, it's not quite as easy as designing a singular team playbook where you know, you can meet as a small staff and get it done. So we started off making multiple trips out to the Seahawks. Obviously, they had gained some real success in their defense utilizing their hawk tackle system, as they called it, which was really a leverage-based tackle system. And I think a key component that's often overlooked is how they define leverage. And within a leverage-based tackling system, we're talking as leverage from the defensive side, you know, not from a height of contact, low man wins, but what's our responsibility as either an inside-out or an outside-in player, and then placing the mass of our body, our shoulders, our head, even our lead foot, to defend that side of the field and force the player into the opposite direction. That leaves our shoulder as the strike point when we're defending our leverage with the mass of our body, and puts an emphasis on needing a great shoulder strike to stop the ball carrier and knock them back. And through their videos, they were able to really convey that we could still play a good brand of physical football. We could not take away some of the aggressiveness of football, but we could play within this style. People, you know, obviously jumped on it, and it became known as the rugby tackle, and probably because the Seahawks used some rugby clips in their footage. And it's become a common term where people say rugby tackle, but you know, you hate to get too specific. Again, I think sometimes people have a tendency to not define that. Now, what makes a rugby tackle? Is it tackling at the thighs? Is it tackling at the numbers? Is it, you know, what level you tackle? Is it where our head is on contact, leverage side, away, across? And so people just started using these brand names instead of really digging into the concepts. Well, with some contacts at USA Rugby and then with our great friends at the Seahawks, you know, we went out there 5 or 6 different times before we shot the video just to sit down, talk shop, watch video, and really dig into the techniques of what we're doing, why we're doing it, and how the best way to teach it will ultimately be put on video to share out with the coaches. And then once we thought we had a good idea, we took it to the AFCA. We took it up the chain at USA Rugby and USA Football, and we're able to get everyone on the same page that we want to emphasize a shoulder strike tackle. We want to have multiple strike points, both above and below the waist for different times of the game or different players. And we want to put it into a progression-based system so coaches have a place to start and a place to finish, or a place to kind of reverse and go back to more entry-level drills for athletes that are struggling with those skills. And I think that's one of the key things that people have really gravitated to, is that a lot of people that have coached for a long time have huge libraries of drills, but if they're not careful, it can just be a collection of their favorite drills from camps and clinics and different coaches all over the country. And without fitting them into a progression that gives you kind of regressions and progressions to go up and down the chain based on individual player skills, then it just becomes a smattering of drills. And we think that the progression-based model is really what's led to the high-quality reception we've received.
And I know, Andy, you know, we talk about this quite a bit, is it fits into really a system. This is about a system of teaching, a system of performance. And, you know, that's something we're looking to expand upon as we continue to grow the game at USA Football.
Yeah, performance in itself can be a really high-quality kind of safety measure. Athletes who know the skills, who can execute them well, and who can do them confidently, often put themselves in a much better situation. The player that goes in tentative, the player that flinches at the moment of contact, or who's undecided in what to do, you know, often results in bad body position. So by being a better, stronger, more confident tackler, a lot of times we can put ourselves in the best position to make solid shoulder contact, to dominate the contact situation, and to be in a position where our shoulders are in the right position to absorb contact, our spine is in line, our head is up, we're rigid through the spine, and we become safer as well. So performance not only helps us to, you know, achieve our dreams as an athlete and show our parents what we can do on the youth football field and have everybody cheer for us, but it can also apply to other things like confidence, like safety. And that's why, we think the progression is so important, because it can't just be a singular isolated drill. We want our players to get better, which means we need to have continued challenges. We need to stretch their skills. We need to give them a place to go once they've mastered drill one. So, you know, our initial drill shoot was 22 drills, which are contained in the advanced shoulder tackle course, which is our free course with Rocky Seta. So, you know, we give the basics, our foundations and our fundamentals in the heads of football program. But then we also give our advanced drill series for free in that advanced course, so that whether it's a youth coach who has quality players, or whether it's a high school coach who's looking for the next step, there's a place to go in higher level drills. And we at USA Football have continued, you know, our research and our development on the tackle system, working with experts not only in American college football but from all over the world to try to find out, you know, what are other new trends, what are other new topics, what are other new tools and kits and bags that we can continue to bring people high level material that'll make their athletes better, make their team better, make their coaching better, but also provide really sound quality tackles, not just for the safety aspect. We know that's important, but we also want to make players better.
I know, Andy, you take part in a lot of the Twitter chats out there, and I can't remember off the top of my head the one that you're on the most. I think it's a tackle chat. I can't remember the exact hashtag, but in staying on top of it and talking about this all the time, what's a trend as you see it, you know, as we move forward with the teaching of tackling?
Yeah, I think one of the trends that's really important is that, you know, as this rise in the lower strike zone tackle is becoming more prevalent, whether you want to call it hawk tackle or rugby tackle. You know, we think there's multiple rugby tackles. I know rugby coaches use as many as 3 to 4 different strike zones within their teachings and within their tackle gradings. But when we talk about tackling below the waist or tackling the thighs, for a lot of coaches, it's a newer skill, which means there's the little details that, you know, as a coach, you get over years of practice and training. And some of those, I think, are missing. And that's what we try to help on when we join these kinds of conversations. I think, you know, the new body position, when you're striking at the thigh level, teaching a player to continue to run their feet and accelerate is normally the biggest challenge. Athletes really have to strain and teach themselves to keep their cleats in the ground when they're at such a low-level body position, so they don't kind of Superman into it and try to dive through the legs like a cut block, but they can actually run through, accelerate, and produce force. And so little areas like that, on what sort of drills do you teach to make sure an athlete can keep their cleats in the ground and continue to run on a thigh-level tackle, are just those little nuggets that take things to the next step. And I think that's the biggest trends I've seen, is getting people used to the new body position, getting them used to accelerating in the new body position, because we don't want to lose our good tackle fundamentals. We want to strike through, run the feet, finish the tackle, but it's the little, you know, the details of it, or the coaching eye, what to look for in a drill that might be right or wrong. Where on the upper body, you know, through the numbers tackle, the traditional knockback tackle, coaches normally can fix it almost instantaneously. It's a new skill, not just for the players, but for the coaches. And scenario, we want to continue to provide quality resources on how to look, how to correct, and how to teach.
Today, I was talking with the defensive coordinator at St. Thomas in Minnesota, one of the top defenses in the country, year in and year out, statistically at the top of not just Division III football, but their stats will hold up against anybody in college football. And we were talking about tackling. And one of the things Coach brought up was teaching their players kind of week to week, and almost in a sense, he didn't say it outright, but in a sense, kind of game planning the types of tackles that they might have to use against a certain type of scheme, from the ways they're going to fit a certain type of offense. And that, you know, tackling can actually be brought into and thought of in those regards, whether it's, you know, situational tackling or tackling that, hey, this week we might have to perform a certain type of tackle against this type of offense, so we're going to work it more this week. We're going to prepare our players. How much have you talked about that and, you know, all the different forms you've been in?
Actually, that's one of my key areas of interest. I'm really, really excited actually you brought that up. I mean, I think through the spring and the preseason, you want to develop a great baseline of tackle fundamentals and all the tackles that you're going to use, whether it's, you know, the upper body level one strike, whether you're going to tackle through the knees and try to do a thigh and drive tackle to, again, dominate the situation and knock them back. Or if you're in a disadvantaged situation, maybe you're a bit out leveraged, or maybe it's the size matchup, you're going to use a thigh and roll tackle. We develop those core skills through our basics and, you know, kind of the early season. But just like an offensive line coach is going to prepare for certain stunts or certain blitzes during the game or the season, during individual game weeks, I think you most definitely want to tailor your tackle training towards what you expect to see. Now, that doesn't mean you don't sharpen, you know, your basic core principles all the time. But if you're playing a team that bases out of a 10 personnel spread, you're thinking your overhang players and your alley runners are going to be in a lot of open space. They're going to be making a lot of open field tackles. They're going to be making a lot of vice tackles, you know, working with the corner, compressing it and containing leverage. If you're playing a team that bases out of, say, 13 and is giving you, you know, wings and H-backs and all sorts of things and wants to kind of muscle ball it down your throat, then your players are going to have to be really clued in to in the box, front up, you know, tighter angles, tackles where they're going to have to knock them back, and they're going to be in small spaces, you know, playing in between gaps, in between defensive linemen who are trying to hold their ground. So how are we going to prepare these players for that? You know, are my overhangs going to be tight to a tight end and going to have to fill in the, you know, the wing bubble? Are they going to be responsible for C-gap and they're going to have downhill action at them? Or are they going to be chasing a slot receiver on a bubble screen? I want to tailor that training based on not only my opponent, obviously, but the scheme that I play. So 3-4 versus 4-3 or 4-2-5, what your overhang players are going to do, you know, what your sub packages are. Are you a stunting front where you may be stunting away from the run play a lot and your players are going to be in a lot of chase situations, or if they stunt correctly, they're going to be right, you know, right in front of them, or are you going to be a read and react team, which is going to put you in different situations. That may dictate how many chase tackles, roll tackles you make versus how many, you know, straight on in the gap, in the hole tackles you kind of make. So when you start evaluating this, you can really prepare not just individual players, but position groups from week to week, you know, based on what the opponent is doing and based on what our defensive countermeasures are going to be and how we expect to deploy, where that puts me on the field, what, you know, what formation does it put in front of me, who are my block challenges, and what's my area of responsibility.
And ultimately, in a collision sport like football, when as coaches, we can start to think like that and start to prepare our teams like that and our players are performing like that, you know, we end up creating essentially safer situations, because when you do the technique right, and we've talked about this actually, you know, with Scott Peters coming in and some of the things we're doing with him, that safety through superior technique. That's how it's done. This is a very technical sport. And so whether it's blocking or defeating blocks or tackling, you know, we really have to be technicians at the game in order to perform and keep ourselves safe.
100%. I mean, I think that's a great line. You know, Scott's obviously great at what he does. It is a technical sport. And for as much as sometimes coaches want to, you know, say, you got to make that play and you got to want it, there's technical aspects, you know, other than just fighting hard in those contact situations. And we got to make sure those are cued in. Not only is it a safety aspect, but going back to that, if you get your feet right, your hands right, your shoulder right, you're going to dominate that contact situation, which is going to make your team better. It's going to give those players a ton of confidence. And then also when we go back to the scheming of individual position groups and versus opponents, you know, we don't want to waste contacts in practice. When we start having collisions, we don't want collisions just because we're doing the same drills we do every week or checking those boxes. When we do have collisions, we want them to be meaningful towards the preparation of the game. And the more we can focus in on what we expect to see and what we expect to do, we can make sure that, you know, when we are putting money in that collision bank, when we are using some of our contact minutes, you know, as various state associations or, you know, start limiting the amount of time of contact, we're using it for the most specific skills possible to sharpen the sword and get those players ready for Friday night or Saturday, depending on your level.
Absolutely. Well, Andy, I always love getting you on the podcast and hearing you talk about the technical aspects of this game. I think it's something we really need to focus on more. Obviously, we talk about fundamentals all the time as coaches and that we got to be excellent at them. But sometimes we get so caught up in the scheme that those take a back seat, especially as the season goes on. So I appreciate your perspective, and I'm excited about, you know, what you're going to be doing here at our national conference. You're involved in a couple sessions, so tell our listeners some of the things you're going to be talking about and presenting at national conference.
Yeah, we'll be doing some on-field live demos at this year's national conference. So you'll see me on the field down there at national conference. We have everything from schematic sessions on, you know, zone blitz packages and quarterback fundamental drills, and I'll be out there running that. I'll also get to assist Rocky Seto, obviously the great coach from our tackle videos and former Seahawks coach, in the tackling session, which is something that I'm really fired up about. If you couldn't tell, this is a passion of mine. And then I'll also be involved in some of our rookie tackle presentations. So USA Football's new bridge game between flag and tackle. It's a project I was involved on this year where we're looking at modified field space and modified numbers as a way to introduce players to the blocking and tackling aspects of the game, but limiting some of the other variables, you know, better coach to player ratio, limited formations, less opponents on the field. The youngsters really get to focus on executing the skills of blocking, block defeat, and tackling in a more controlled environment because of numbers. But when you watch the game, it truly is football. These guys are running into each other. They're striking each other. They're making blocks. They're finishing to the ground, or they're making tackles. So they're playing real football. I mean, 6- and 8-man football is a sanctioned sport at the high school level in a lot of states. So they're playing real football, but in a way that may be more manageable for the youth football mind. So between the tackling session and the rookie tackle session, I'm really excited to present two of the things that we've really been working hard on at USA Football.
And Andy, I talk with our guys who are coming back to the National Conference. They have already been there. It's just such a great event. Give our listeners your perspective on our National Conference and, you know, what coaches can get there.
First off, I think it's the premier conference for the high school coach, because this is a conference that is really peer-to-peer learning. It's guys who are in the same boat as the other coaches. They have the same challenges. They're dealing with the same age kids. You know, they may not have a hand-picked recruiting class. They have the kids that are in the squiggly lines that make up the school district just like you. So everything from how they go about building team culture, instilling values, you know, developing fan support and making football important in their community, to something as granular as playing the 3-3 stack defense with a 4 technique instead of a 5 technique. So it's everything you could possibly want, but it's going to be delivered to you from another high school coach. And the coaches that we have presenting, the amount of success they've had, the amount of national recognition they have, shows the quality that they are. And you know this as well as I, because you've met most of these gentlemen. They're good people. They're great character men, that, you know, the kind of person we want to be in charge of our youngsters. So when you can interact with them on a personal level around the facility, but then get to hear them speak and get up on the whiteboard and talk about what makes their program unique and special, there's always something at each session that you're going to take away that is going to make your program better next year, those little tweaks and changes. And it's just a great networking event. I think one of my fondest memories of last year is talking to people who made friends, you know, from another conference or even another state, and they became really quick to share video and share resources and share help with each other, maybe because they didn't have to play each other next year, but they developed a coaching network that was outside of their immediate area. And I think the more we can develop these friendships and networks, the more we can spread great information from one coach, from one state, all across the country. And that's really a highlight of mine, to see these coaches give back, give to each other, and expand that framework of great high school coaches. Because football in America really lives on Friday night. It was a special place for me, even with the success I had, and something I'll always hold dear. So if we can help grow it, I'll do everything I can.
Andy, I appreciate all you do for the game, and you know, I'm excited to join you there as well. Again, for our listeners out there, still a chance to register. It is January 26th through 28th in Orlando. Again, it'll be a conference you want to come back to every year once you go to it for the first time. So, Andy, thanks again for being on the show, and I will talk with you soon, as I do every day.
Yep, thank you for having me on. It's always a pleasure to speak to all the coaches that listen to your show. As always, you know, we're at USA Football. Our job is to help you guys. I think at conferences and clinics, people say it all the time, but I truly mean it. My email and information is on the website, and if I can ever help any of the listeners out there, please reach out to me. It's what I get to do every day. I'm the luckiest man in the world, so hope to hear from you, and we'll support you guys in any way possible.
Thanks, Andy. And his email address is arylandy@usafootball.com. And he's also on Twitter and is pretty active in some of the forums, especially if they involve tackling. And your Twitter handle, Andy?
It'll be USA Football MT.
Awesome. Thanks again, Andy, and we'll see everybody in Orlando.
Yes, sir.
Thanks for listening to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast. For more resources, visit the Coach Performance Center at usafootball.com.